Thank you. I'm uncharacteristically nervous about this. We anthropologists usually get to pretend that we're the only expert on our tribe and nobody can ask us questions. But here I'm confronted with colleagues who actually know about the subject, which denies me my first resort, which is to lie my head off. I'm a part-time Vermonter living not far from where Calvin Coolidge grew up and had his farm. And there's a story about a neighbor of Calvin's, a young man who was, like many Vermonters, fairly laconic, who had the opportunity to take a trip across the Atlantic Ocean. And he made his trip, he returned home, and one of his neighbors asked him, "Well, what is the ocean like?" And he paused for a moment, looked at him, said, "Big, wet." Well, that strikes me as the substance of most of what I have to say about social justice and higher education. And while that lacks the eloquence of Hayek, the perspicacity of Nozick, perhaps the seductive dance of Rawls' Dance of a Thousand Veils of Ignorance, what it lacks in intellectual subtlety, it makes up in concision. So my first task today, I guess, is to add a little bit of detail to that, the crashing waves, the roll of the deck, the dark swell, the keening gulls, the dead albatross around. No, never mind that. Let me start with the mermaid, Barbara Applebaum. She is a teacher of education who a few years ago in the Teacher College Record wrote a short article, "Is Teaching Social Justice a Liberal Bias?" Her answer, yes, yes it is. But under certain conditions of systemic injustice, she wrote, such bias is necessary and fair. Making social justice education a requirement of higher education is both even-handed and, although a type of ideology, it promotes rather than impedes criticality. Educational researchers, she exhorted, to be less concerned about bias and ideology in regard to social justice education and to turn their attention to how privileged students can be educated without recentering their privilege in ways that sacrifice the education of the marginalized. Okay. In other words, quit worrying about the rationale and just get on with it. Now, Applebaum need not worry. Higher education is indeed getting on with it. Today happens to be the last day of Social Justice Week. I don't know if that was planned in advance for this occasion, but I take it that we're celebrants at this table. Social Justice Week is an event that has been taking place this week at dozens of colleges and universities around the country. One of them is the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh, which chose as this year's theme, social and economic inequality. Now, that was severely limiting to what they wanted to talk about, no doubt. It narrowed their options unduly. This is the fifth annual Social Justice Week at Oshkosh. It has gone from 6 events to 23. It is honored this year by having one of the giants of social justice advocacy, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson of Georgetown, a sociologist, introduced as one more tremendous nationally recognized Social Justice Week speaker in a growing list of thought leaders on equality, sustainability, LGBTQ issues, and other key social justice topics. That's from the director of their Office of Equity and Affirmative Action. Now, one might wonder how one makes a career specializing as a Social Justice Week speaker. That would be one busy week. But the answer is that Social Justice Week is a floating holiday. It is always Social Justice Week somewhere. But let's stay a little bit longer in Oshkosh. How did this week's events promote the Applebaumian goals of even-handedness and promoting criticality, unprivileging the privileged and restoring the marginalized? Well, the week started, I should refer to my notes on this, with zombie criminology, mass incarceration and the social restructuring of America, I'm quoting here, a multimedia presentation of excerpts from classic horror films of vampires, werewolves, and zombies, music backtrack interspersed with social and economic data, vampires represent the ruling elite, fellow vampires, werewolves, the professional class, we may have some werewolves here too, and zombies, the problematic disposable poor. Tuesday brought a seminar on men in nursing, understanding the challenges men face working in this predominantly female profession. Wednesday brought Professor Dyson's lectures. Thursday, wrong way to have a body, why fatness is a social justice issue, dealing with stigma based on weight, which is prevalent as racial and gender stigma and intersects with class oppression. And culminating in the student-led, "This is me, respect me for who I am" campaign. All right. Is this too much detail? Now, I could be accused at this point by defenders of social justice advocacy of trivializing what's going on by going too far down into local detail. I think I also could be suspected by some in this room as losing the intellectual forest for the intellectual trees. But I'm an anthropologist and I kind of revel in details, and this is big, it's wet, and you need to know how big. You don't get to that by necessarily emulating Virginia Woolf's "To the Lighthouse" punctiliousness of every bubble in the froth, but we need a little bit of that. The details often tell the story better than the most perfectly framed abstractions, so I'm going to stick with the details for a while. Social Justice Week is not just in Oshkosh. It was also at the University of Wyoming this week. Pardon. The 17th, they've had more of these in Wyoming than in Oshkosh, the 17th Shepherd Symposium on Social Justice, sponsored by the Social Justice Research Center there, kicked off on Monday with the release of their new logo, which is a big red box with rounded corners and a white circle off-center on one side. And I searched in vain for a good half hour for you to try to come up with what this new logo means and why they were devoting a half hour to its rollout, but I come back empty-handed. The keynote address was by the members of GLARE, which is Gay Lesbian Alliance for something or other. In the battle for gender equity, FIT, there's another piece of jargon that I don't understand, gender equity, FIT, disabilities, and how do Native Americans fall into this discussion around equal treatment on soil that was originally their ancestors? The grammar here gets a bit wobbly. Each movement is shrouded in inherent differences, though unquestionably similar in their end goals. That's simply the description that Wyoming provides of what this is all about. We then plunge into a program that is rich in variety, if nothing else. Adults with autism spectrum disorders living in a world that is set up to accommodate autistic children. I'm surprised by that. I didn't realize our world was set up to accommodate autistic children, but it does explain a lot of things. We move from autism to perceptions of drag, social activism, and changing views in the drag community. That's not referring to racing, I believe. Multiculturalism in the classroom, that seems bland enough. Overcoming ignorance is critical to full inclusion and giving everyone the chance to participate, feel value, and be heard. There's reworking motherhood. There is Seneca Falls, Selma, and Stonewall. So long as society privileges the normal, as normal, those who determine the safety and well-being of those labeled as abnormal or queer, there is no democracy. Native American youth and African American pop culture countering the master narrative of the West. Unsustainable impacts of high-speed rail on nearby communities in suburban Shanghai. You need to be in Wyoming this week to learn about the dangers of high-speed rail in Shanghai. Atheists in academe from the Secular Student Alliance. There's preschool children's learning, rethinking aid to Haiti, caring for LGBT older adults, seminar on bullying, lessons on how to scream, which is, I wrote this down, using your voice during times of personal devastation. I always find screaming to be very constructive in those circumstances. Hate crime law, what's next? The marginalization of people who are proactive about social justice. Well, you wouldn't judge from this list that they are being particularly marginalized. So it is well worth exploring. By the way, that is nicely subtitled a monologue. And the event wraps up today with the pro-gay marriage ball titled Bow Tie the Knot party tonight. You're all invited. Well, enough of this. Social Justice Week is just an exuberant display of the spiritedness of this movement. And that is to say, it's far from marginalized. This sea is really big, and it's everywhere. The existence of a Social Justice Week would seem to be a kind of redundancy given that we also have social justice curricula. I'm going to turn to some other notes here. I tried when I began working on this talk to come up with a list of the different ways in which social justice has instantiated itself in universities. Among those are as a mandate from specialized accreditors. The Council on Social Work Education, for example, considers that all social work programs must, and I'm quoting, incorporate social justice practices. Students in that case have fallen afoul of this rule and been kicked out of their programs for unwillingness to go along with some of the entailments of social justice, such as being ordered to advocate for homosexual adoption, gay marriage, abortion, that sort of things. Those with religious objections, apparently, to any of these things are now no longer, by the standards of the profession, even suitable to be educated as social workers. This rush of social justice into the world of accreditation is one of those things that's largely invisible to the public, but it's not just social work in fields where one might not expect it, such as occupational therapy, music education. Social justice is now on the rise as something that is so intrinsic to being professionally qualified in the field that it's mandated as part of any educational program. There are academic departments that make social justice, even without the pressure of an accreditor on them, a intrinsic part of their programs. An example, Virginia Commonwealth University's School of Social Work, again, the PhD program, it says, is particularly committed to the school's mission to enhance social and economic justice. It has a capstone course, which a specific grading criteria to each comprehensive exam is that the student demonstrates sensitivity to social work principles, including the goal of promoting social justice. Degree programs in social justice, apart from degree programs in other areas where social justice itself is the degree, Arizona State has a master's. We found 23 of these on our look so far, but there's master's programs, there's BAs, there's majors, there's minors, there's programs that are not yet beyond the level of concentrations, there's colloquia, there's certificate programs, there are doctoral programs, at least one, in social justice education at UMass Amherst. I suspect if I were able to poll the people in this room, I would be able to add to that list. There is another version of social justice that enters in the picture in the form of a college mission or college-wide emphasis on social justice. This is Roosevelt University. Deeply rooted in practical scholarship and principles of social justice expressed as ethical awareness, leadership development, economic progress, and civic engagement, Roosevelt University, it's in Chicago, encourages community partnerships and prepares its diverse students for responsible citizenship in a global society. You have it all there. There are numerous academic courses that introduce the history of the concept and the controversies surrounding it. I tried to create two lists out of this, those in which from the curriculum, if we could find it, or the syllabus of the course, there was some effort to represent social justice as actually having a history in which there is a voice other than Rawls to be heard. And there are indeed a fair number of those courses where you can find Hayek or Nozick represented. One of the more interesting ones that my associate Ashley Thorne spotted the other day was a syllabus that 2 years ago represented Rawls and Hayek, and now has been revised to remove Hayek. That's called progress. We have many more courses that appear to be just social justice straight up in its current form. There's a disciplinary code at the West Virginia University where the social justice office is responsible for handling, among other things, sexual harassment complaints. So social justice now becomes a standard for the other kind of justice, the sort that merits punishments for malefactors. There is a student code of conduct at East Tennessee State University in which students actually have to sign a statement that says, social justice, I will engage in activities to gain sensitivity to and knowledge about oppression and cultural ethnic diversity and further become committed to promoting the achievement of individual and collective social and economic justice, signed here. We found, I think it's about 15 places that offer scholarships to students in social justice. So you get cash for being socially just or at least committed to the idea. Right. There are some areas of the curriculum that are self-evidently more susceptible to this than others. Social work has come up. Counseling and therapy, law and criminal justice, sociology, education especially. For some reason, the allied health professions, lots of philosophy departments, many law schools. Sometimes the connections seem a little bit strained, or English departments have social justice commitments as well. The result of this sort of growing welter of departmental interests has been the rise of centers on campuses where they attempt to find some kind of common ground among the diaspora of social justice missionaries. And we've also compiled a fairly extensive list of these growing centers. Well, so much for the C. I would like to find some way in here to say how the National Association of Scholars has responded to this, and we have. We've been writing about it for a while. But before I do that, let me put in some reservations. Joseph Johnson said just an hour or so ago that social justice is compassion for the poor, bogus philanthropy. Well, Yeah, it is that, but that doesn't seem to me to be quite a broad enough definition to capture that widespread of things that you saw in the topics covered by Social Justice Week. Samuel Gregg last night pointed to social justice being something that has made parts of our universities into factories of indoctrination. Well, yes, that too. The factories are there. But that also doesn't seem to me to be quite adequate to the sheer variety of this. Compassion for the poor, it's in there. What about the autistic? They're not necessarily poor. Indoctrination, the students are flooding to this stuff. They love it. It's willful indoctrination on the part of some of the professors, but it is candy to a lot of the students. This, I think, takes us into the wet part of the ocean. It's not just big, it's wet. Or maybe we need some other metaphors. Social justice is the duct tape of contemporary ideas, or perhaps it's the silly putty. That is, it can do anything, and it can be stretched into any shape. And it accomplishes all this with just a delicious combination of daringness, moral self-approbation, intellectual self-congratulation, a kind of communitas, that feeling of solidarity with everybody, or at least all the good people. I was taken by Ann Wortham's quotation from President Obama, naturally addressing a student audience, that individual salvation depends on collective salvation. Yes, this is a salvation doctrine. This is very closely allied to what happens to religion in a secular age. To be a little bit more the anthropologist, social justice is a total social fact. It fills up the whole of life with a sense of meaning, with practical purposes, with senses of social connection. Now, to say all that is to say something that I think runs against the grain of those of us in the Philadelphia society, which is you can't defeat this sort of thing with a rational argument. No number of rational arguments will defeat it. You've got to realize you're dealing in the world of worldviews that are emotionally connected to people's lives in a manner where they don't just give them up because you've trumped them with syllogisms. That's not to say that we shouldn't make those rational arguments. They are important. They do need to be pressed. But don't expect to win too many arguments that way. A couple years ago, I was approached by a young faculty member who was quite concerned about the rise of a new social justice center on her campus. And she asked, what is it that I can do about this? And I didn't really have a good answer, but I had some kind of answer. I said several things. Try to deny them the camouflage they use to sell this off campus. They'll be using this one way to the students and quite a different way with donors and the alumni. And that's something you can do. They will try to blur the lines between academic work and political advocacy. You don't have to allow them to do that. Call them out on those efforts to try to pretend that promoting their favorite cause is a form of academic work when it's not. Watch out for their opportunism. They'll grab on to any popular cause on campus. Call them out on that. Nobody likes an opportunist. They will be pushing for common funds from your university. And even people who don't like your political or ideological or personal views are going to be jealous over money. And you can fight them on that score with some unexpected allies. They will be guilty of resource hoarding, and you can get them on that as well. Well, those are just practical weaknesses that you can expect in any of these movements. Again, I don't think that that's a magic bullet in fighting them back, but we have to start somewhere, and realizing that these are practical battles fought campus by campus is something. Somebody is paying for Social Justice Week at your university, and they probably don't know it. Maybe it's coming out of student activity fees. Maybe the state taxpayers are underwriting it. Would they really be happy about that if they knew it? Well, why don't you make sure that they do know it? This promise I put in a few minutes ago about what is my organization doing about this. The National Association of Scholars that claims to be national ought to be doing something. And we've been tearing off reports one after the other, the most recent one about Bowdoin College in Maine. There is something to be said for simply documenting our times and trying to get down the dimensions of this ocean that is out there. There's also something to be said to fighting particular battles when they can be fought. About 10 years ago, we took on the leading accreditor for schools of education, NCATE, which had established a social justice disposition as a requirement for people who wanted to become teachers. That is, schools of education had to not only determine but to teach a disposition to the students, and those lacking that disposition couldn't be teachers. We fought them on that, and they voluntarily withdrew their dispositional requirement. A small victory, but a victory. A little bit after that, we took on schools of social work and produced a report titled Scandal of Social Work Education. The Council on Social Work Education has, however, roundly rebuffed us. They have maintained their social justice standard to this day. So we don't win all of them, but I don't regard that fight as over. And I think there is something to be said that we just keep the light of day on these things. We are going to win some victories. Let me say something. Oh, and I should say right now, we are at the beginning stages of about an 18-month project to study how social justice is rolling out over American higher education and what could be done about it. My colleague Ashley Thorne, who is over here, is leading that project, and the sorts of things I've been talking about are just material that we have been churning up as we get this thing underway. So more to be said about this from NAS in the near future. Let me say a word about this word social and social justice. There have been people who are much more expert in this deconstructing social justice before me, and I don't intend to tread in their tracks, but social is one of those words that has an almost Freudian quality of the oceanic about it. It gives you a feeling of total immersion without meaning anything in particular. Think of the phrase social media, which is, what kind of media is not social? What kind of justice is not social? And leaving aside the history of distinctions back to Aristotle, if we lived on our own planet, each our own king with no one else around us, there would be no need for justice. Justice arises relationally. It is how we learn to live in a world in which we have parents, in which we have siblings, which we have playmates, classmates, teachers. From early on, we live in a world in which justice becomes a matter of how we relate to other people. Putting that magic word social in front of it does come with a history, but its real significance, I would say, to most people who don't know that history, who haven't read Rawls, who don't know anything about the Rerum Novarum and Catholic social teaching and all the sorts of things that could go into a robust understanding, social justice is just magic justice. It is justice that has ceased to be a matter of how one deals with individual slights and plunges us instead into this realm of social categories. And when one can begin to think of the whole universe as being in some sense unjust because it has built into it social categories that don't privilege me in every way I would like to be privileged, to use their own language, then we are stuck with something that I think we have to cope with, not as a rational argument, but as a kind of pathology. I think the best way I could wrap this up is by taking, go on a mad search for some notes here, that social justice has become our rhetoric for social divisiveness, in that it elevates social divisiveness to a positive good. It rejects out of hand the concept that justice itself arises from our recognition of common and shared humanity, and it turns instead to the insistence on the priority of group affiliation. That's a doctrine that cuts against the deepest values of the university, among other things. It rules out the emphasis on individual merit. It vitiates the notion of equal opportunity to elevate instead the idea of equity. And it sweeps aside the idea of open inquiry to produce inclusion as something greater and better. Now, it's big, it's wet. A few years ago, when I encountered the University of Massachusetts new degree in social justice, a master's degree program, I was astonished. I said that I thought that just when we had thought we had exhausted the mire of frivolities that could be launched into higher education, someone has plunged to the bottom of the Marianas Trench. See, my sea metaphors are already in gear here. I suppose there is no bottom to this, that higher education can proliferate new categories of people suffering new injustices as long as it exists. Now, maybe the dynamics of higher education, its finances, are going to change in some mysterious way that will wash all this away. But for the immediate future, we are dealing now with the institutionalization of social justice as not just one idea in the mix of frivolities and vanities that have taken over our system of higher learning, but as the main idea. This is the encompassing governing thought that you will find college presidents extolling in their commencement speeches, in their convocations. You will find it entering in, as it happens more and more, to the mission statements of colleges. It becomes the floor under which this entire enterprise is built. Now, that sounds like a terribly gloomy thing, but then again, it's just big and wet.